Welcome to Beauty and the Brain with your hosts, Dr. Chris Crowley and nurse practitioner Jerry Drinkard. Get ready to dive into the latest in revolutionary treatments, cutting-edge devices, and wellness secrets. Whether you're a consumer or provider, we're here to empower you at the forefront of beauty and aesthetics.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Beauty and the Brain, the podcast where we discuss all things aesthetics. I'm your co-host, Dr. Chris Crowley.
And I'm Jerry Drinkard, family nurse practitioner. Together, Chris and I own Skin and Tonic, a med spa that's located here in Pace, Florida. And today, we're going to talk about something that we kind of talk about beauty all the time and prettiness and what it means and what it takes. But what are the advantages of it? And do people that are prettier, do they have more advantage over people that are considered less attractive?
Yeah, I mean, so we're talking about beauty bias. Do you think it's really, really true that pretty people have more opportunities?
Unfortunately, I do. I think it starts young because when I saw this, one of the first things I thought about was I saw, you've probably all seen it, like on social media where the back to school where parents are introducing their kids to their teacher online. Have you seen any of these, like videos? And so the moms are FaceTiming with the kids' parents, and they'll put up like a really pretty teacher, and the kids love it, and they're smiling, and they're sweet, and they're like, and your other teacher's Miss Smith, and they show this like teacher that's just horrible looking, really bad teeth, yeah, mugshot with bad hair, and the kid's face just melts. And so even at that age, there was zero interaction between the kid and the pretty teacher, or the kid and the teacher that was less attractive, but the kid's face actually shows that they like the pretty teacher more. And so from a very young age, somehow we have some vision of what is beauty in our mind.
But I think, I mean, we didn't really plan this for this episode, but it literally gets us back to the discussion that you and I had on how we formed the name of the podcast.
Yeah.
And so I was reading a research in a neuroscience journal on what makes us identify as pretty. And so at what age does that start? Is it a reflection of how our parents interact with someone, something? What is wired in us to look at something and identify what's beautiful, what's pretty, and how does that cross cultures? But I believe there's some parts of this that, and even this description you just provided, that's not what we would consider just beautiful, but it's some things related to hygiene and the way people are put together. So if you take something that, and you take the same person and you put them in a very unkempt look, so their hair is messy, their face is not washed, alter the photo, black out their teeth, so poor dental hygiene, and then take that same person, so with the same bone structure, skin, and make them put together. So you style their hair, you give them dental implants, whatever, and dress them nice. Then that also makes a big difference. So it's not just the underlying characteristics of what's beautiful and what's not, right? It's the way that they present themselves and how groomed they are, how put together they are. I think that we are also subjected to that and impacted by that, I should say, as employers.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to tell the story when we've interviewed before and some of the things when we've interviewed for staff here. People say you have pretty staff. We hear that comment, and we do think we have pretty staff, but we didn't hire based on looks. But there were definitely people that we didn't hire, not because of their looks, but because of how
their
they presentation.
Presented
their presentation.
Right. I think that's part of when people come in, like, we do want our staff to, like, all be dressed to light, to, you know, their clothes to fit, to, obviously, we're in a place that we do focus on beauty and like health. And so that's what we want the image to be when they come through the front door. And so I think that just that presentation, because we've clearly have people here in the past that look better than other people, or people that look worse than other people. And like, I don't think anybody's ever walked in and said, well, she's ugly, I can't believe she works here.
Do you think anybody's ever walked in and thought, wow, Jerry needs some work?
Probably. Probably. Because there's been many, many days when I have. I bet they don't think it today because you, like, did the doozy on me yesterday. Maybe we did the doozy on me yesterday so I can keep my job.
Yeah, keep your job. No, but I do think it's interesting because that when people are interviewing for an aesthetic position, especially We've had this several times with our front desk position, where they're going to be the first person who greets a client walking through the door, and they will not get themselves together at all for the interview. And so they are disheveled, appearing late. And it's like, if you can't, it doesn't matter really. Those things to me make a bigger impression when we're hiring than something I would consider an absolute beauty standard. It literally is just get yourself together, show up on time, and the way you present. But I think there's also studies to support. So that's one thing. And that's, to me, that is, again, what I say about the low-hanging fruit. We can all identify with that. But then there are some things that we look at that really cross cultures and that we do consider ideal beauty standards. So we can look, and this is one of the things that we teach about often, is that we can look at proportions in the face. So we look at ratios of structures to each other. So we know that there are certain proportions that are considered more ideal, more attractive, and that crosses all cultures. We know from studies in the, you know, legal system, it's interesting. They have some things out there that show that more attractive, or people who appear more attractive, have more lenient sentencing. And so certainly this crosses professional borders, cultural borders. We can look in healthcare, and that we know that providers, when given surveys, will perceive more attractive patients as healthier. In society, when people see more attractive individuals, they perceive them as having wealth, health, because they think they have the ability to do those things to keep it better. It's interesting that our videographer just mentioned that he met a rep in Miami, and they said there's no such thing as ugly people. There's just poor people. They don't have the money to get all the things. So I don't think that, you know, again, that's necessarily all true. There are some natural things that we have, some natural characteristics that we're born with genetically, and we can augment or enhance that. But unfortunately, I do think in society, you are judged by the way that you look.
Well, we can talk briefly about the workplace just here, like ours, and we talked specifically about our front desk, but in the workplace in general, like they say that studies show that people that are more attractive end up in leadership roles. And so there is a correlation between beauty. And again, I don't know that it's beauty, but I think it's presentation, and that having that well-prepared presentation being put together. I think back about our front desk that we hired, and as soon as I saw her on the interview, she was sitting in her bed, and she didn't have on pajamas, but she was dressed really comfortable. From Texas, Andrea, but she like blew her interview out of the park. She was cute, but she was still like dressed like very comfortable, but she was put together. And so, like, you know, all of us, there was something about her. She was attractive. I mean, you could put her in a croaker sack and she'd be pretty. But the other thing was just the presentation. Even though it was in a home environment, she presented herself in a way that made you want to hire. And so I think that, I think presentation has a lot to do with it, because you can take a very pretty person that presents herself in a bad way, and I don't think they do have a leg to stand on.
So it was interesting, because I wanted to look up the studies that we actually pulled some information for this podcast. And so we talked about beauty being an advantage in many situations, but there are also times when it can be a disadvantage. There was a Harvard Business Review study that looked at women and men in leadership positions, and attractive women, highly attractive women, observers judged her as less truthful and more likely to be terminated than less attractive women. So there was something about when you had a really pretty executive in the leadership that didn't correlate across with sexes. So when they had an attractive male in a leadership position, he was seen as truthful and was more likely to hold a job. Attractive females were viewed as not truthful. So that's one. In 2021, there was another study that looked on competence, morality, and attractiveness as a predictor of a hiring decision. And so in the study, they rated male and female candidates, and they looked at just their faces. So they had these raters who didn't interact with them. They looked at the faces, and they wanted them to rate them and say, what is that person's morality, competence, attractiveness, and then how did that impact the hiring decision? And they found that for female applicants, if they were perceived as attractive, that had a complex effect, that sometimes it was one of multiple facial cues that influenced impressions and it competed sometimes with confidence and the perceived suitability for the job. So pretty much that's reinforcing what they found in the Harvard Business Review,
yeah,
that attractiveness didn't always, that it made people doubt that they were confident, because maybe some of those people that were in the hiring position, the position of hiring, thought that they're not competent. They've got this because of their look. So it's a complex. There's another study by Gruber that looked at women who emerged as leaders in temporarily assigned groups. And they looked at basically looking at leaders of group tasks, and that people who were attractive were seen as more socially confident, but it didn't say that they were less competent. It added a nuance that they were saying that, yes, you're socially competent, but maybe you're not technically competent to lead in the role that we put you in. So it can cut both ways. And from a lot of these that we've listed, it appears to disproportionately affect women in the negative.
That was my question. Do you think that impacts women more than men?
Yeah, I mean, it appears to, at least from these studies. So we certainly all have our, you know, opinions, and we can say that there are certain industries and certain roles that it may be beneficial, but there's plenty of studies that show that that can cut both ways and it can actually be harmful. So you know, I think you have to be aware of that. I think that as an employer, hiring on skills and job fit are way more important than looks. You know, certainly there are, you know, jobs or positions where people will not even see who they're hiring. So you don't have a photo, you don't have a video interview. So you truly are hiring based on skill and what they present to you. I don't think that necessarily works for our industry, because not that I need someone pretty, but I need to know that they're going to like have themselves put together, because that's what we're representing here. And so, yes, I can dictate and mandate all that, but if someone is not going to have good, like just general personal hygiene and show up in a way that's important to represent our clinic, then I don't want to hire them as a representative of me.
I've had several patients, and they were all female patients, but probably just by chance, but I've had several come and say that they want to do something just a little better because they work with a lot of young people. And so the other thing that I get often is that they people that have waited until they're older to have children, and they want to do something to look younger so that they can be involved in the moms groups because they're older than the other moms, and they feel that their looks exclude them from being able to participate in activities for their kids at school. And so I do find that interesting, that beauty kind of goes and plays a role in that rather than simply being a mom.
You know, getting back to kind of what started this whole conversation about beauty, what are some of the things that you think are cross-cultural that we find standards of beauty, whether you're in Africa, Asia, or in North America, what are things that you would consider as universally beautiful?
I don't think people like at a glance look at somebody and think pretty or not. I think there are several things that go into it. I think symmetry. I think a lot of us don't even think about symmetry or recognize I don't think we realize that we recognize symmetry as beauty. Skin tone, skin quality, I think is a lot more important.
Like a more even complexion. There are some interesting studies on that. I talk about this in some of my classes, where they take photos and they age them in different ways, some with fine lines and wrinkles, others with pigment. And our eyes are really good at even picking up on subtle pigment differences. And those subtle pigment differences alone will make people appear older than their stated age. And so I think a clear, even complexion is really important as an overall marker that our eyes are really good at subtly picking up on that and identifying that person as more vibrant, more healthy, more youthful.
Yeah. And well, that it kind of leads into some of the other things, because we have, you know, people use makeup, not only females now, male and female use makeup to do that, to, you know, make the complexion look closer to perfect, but also contouring. I mean, it's another thing that we do to, you know, make higher cheekbones in females, or a wider jawline or more defined jawline in men. And so all of these things are things that we can do that are considered to be beautiful across cultures. I think a fit physique, a male that has broad shoulders or a bit larger arms, or a female with a small waist. And so all of those things, I think, go in at a glance, because I think if you ask somebody what makes someone pretty, it'd be real hard for a layperson to list out those things. Like, you can say at a glance.
But those are things that we're working on in the aesthetic clinic. So I think that's where our expertise come into play. So in general, we know that most people are not symmetric, that they have some degree of asymmetry, but usually when we're doing aesthetic procedures, we're aiming for symmetry. So we're trying to make things match on both sides of the face or the body. And so we're aiming for symmetry. We're augmenting or enhancing some of the things. It's called sexual dimorphism, but basically it means there are things that are different in males versus females, and we're usually augmenting or enhancing that some way. So on our male patients, giving them broader, stronger jawlines, like you mentioned, with our female patients, giving them higher, more elevated cheekbones, making the eyes appear more open or more wide, all those things that kind of signify youth, vitality, energy. And so those are things that we're doing in the clinic. You said, you know, they can do it with makeup. We do it with injectables and things here in the clinic. One of the things when we were preparing for this that I also thought was very interesting is looking at, so those are cross-cultural. That we can say applies everywhere, some of those features. But then what makes people, let's say in the southeast of the U.S., find a look that they consider in general attractive? And does that correlate with the same thing that you would see in Latin America or the same thing that you would see in Asia? And probably not. So some of those basic characteristics can be applied. But one of the things that we look at is what's considered more beautiful or more attractive in a particular region is the average of faces and the average of looks in that area. And so there are some unique variances in specific cultures and specific regions. And so certain individuals will be found more attractive in that area. And also certain individuals will be seen as more exotic. And so when we say that in the US, we think about people from other cultures coming here. But keep in mind, if we were to present somewhere else, it would be viewed also the same. So what would be very average in the Southeast U.S. is not going to be the same average that you would find in French Polynesia. And so those cultures are going to have a different idea of what they consider beautiful within their own culture. And that's usually an average of kind of the faces you see there. Male, female characteristics, cheekbones, ratios, proportions, symmetry, that's across the board. And then your average of faces in a particular area. So if you're in aesthetics, I think it's important to look at what area do you live in, what region, what are those people trying to accomplish? If you're treating a lot of people of a certain ethnic or cultural descent, then I think it's important to recognize what that culture considers beautiful and understand that you're working to achieve that.
We've had a lot of talk about faces, but what do you think about hair? We always hear blondes have more fun, but do you think that blondes are dumber than brunettes?
Are blondes dumber than brunettes? I can't believe you just asked that.
I figure I'd ask something because I know you'll give an answer.
I will give an answer.
Give me some of your statistics.
I will give you statistics on that. So actually, they are not dumber than brunettes, but there are studies that show that they are perceived as less intelligent than brunettes. So when we look at IQ studies, there's not a difference. But when you look at perceived intelligence and leadership, there are multiple psychology journals. So going all the way back into the 80s, probably even sooner than that, that's as far back as I look, that found blonde women were rated as less intelligent and less capable leaders compared to brunettes. Even when other factors, so the resumes were identical, other characteristics were identical. The brunettes were considered to be more competent, while blondes were associated with attractiveness. So they were considered more attractive and higher sociability, but not as competent at the job. That was just looking at photos. So then there was some in the Psychology of Women Quarterly that found that blonde hair was perceived as more feminine, but less intelligent and less serious. There was one in an employment and earning studies in 2010, where they found that blonde women in the U.S. on average earn about 7% more than women with other hair colors, despite the stereotype that they may be less competent, they earned more money. And then there were some that look at women, so the same female wearing different color wigs, blonde, brunette, and red, and participants were consistently rated as less intelligent and less serious when they had on a blonde wig versus a brunette or red. So all other factors were the same. It was the same person just wearing a different color wig, and they were seen as less intelligent, less serious. So for sure that perception holds true. It does not hold true when you actually test for that. So there's nothing that says blondes are dumber than brunettes.
So there's your answer.
Okay. I think we've covered this in depth. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Beauty and the Brain. We look forward to seeing you next week.
See you soon.